Hello, hello, hello. Welcome everybody to yet another beautiful day. My name is Mfon, aka MC, and I have with me Onyeka. I called you a movie buff the last time. I'm thinking of what to call you today. Maybe I shouldn't be looking for a different name for
aspiring
you.
Aspiring American Dreamer.
Well,
the American dream is alive and kicking.
You know, the thing is, a lot of people feel that the American dream is just a dream.
It's really not a dream. And the beauty of it is, it's available for everybody, the globe. They've given it to all of us. They've allowed us to tap into that American consciousness of can be, and, you know, you can get it done. And if you just, you know, if you aspire to respire, you know, you can perspire and all that, but, and all that jazz.
But can we ask a question? Like, first of all, what do you understand by the American dream?
The American dream to me is, if you really want something bad enough, it will come. And so the society you live in is uniquely placed to allow you achieve it. Yeah. In some countries, you might think of something and you look at the things around you, and even if you try and do it, you might be limited by one or two things. But America seems to be the place where, more often than not, you get what you fight for.
There are people...
So I think that's why they call it the American dream.
The American dream, in layman's terms, is just, from what I have understood of it, it's basically a promise that if you do the do, you will get the get.
Yes.
And the thing now is that there is supposed to be an equivalence with the input and the output. So the American dream is like a promise. Maybe if you can work that hard, if you can do beyond others.
Is it necessarily hard work? I think hard work is a given. I think people try and avoid saying working hard, because there are people that wake up in the morning and bust their backs and work 3 to 4 or 5 jobs and they never break even, or they barely break even. So
it's semantics.
It's not just for people that work hard. It's also for people that work intelligently.
Yeah, that is what they call it's working smart, really.
And, actually, I think it's revised. I think it's for people that actually have a vision. The American dream is for people of vision.
People who see
beyond. You know, normally people say, okay, maybe I work in a store, I can become the supervisor. Then from supervisor, I can become the manager of the branch. Then maybe I can move upstairs and get to be, take it to the headquarters and stuff. I think the American dream is beyond that. It's beyond just working and getting to the top. It's actually being able to see something big. Seeing Las Vegas when it was just a desert. The American dream, Las Vegas is the best example of what the American dream is to me. People went to a desert and saw what it is now. How they managed to do that, I don't know. But that, just to me, is what the American dream is all about. Being able to see what looks like a paradise emerge from what is basically arid land.
Well, I think the American dream, too, is more of... I'm glad that we are talking about this thing just before we slide into this movie, because I think it's good for people to have a great understanding of or the idea of them, because when you hear about the American dream, and you come and like the average American or some of the paperwork or text that you come across that talk about this dream, you'll find that some people debate it, and it's a very complex debate. Some people will tell you, dude, it's just a dream. And some people who fall within that spectrum, there are others that on the other side of the spectrum that will say, oh, these guys are just being lazy. They can't, you know, they can't do anything, and others, you know. And some may still agree that some people achieve it. They may say it's the basketballers. If you get drafted in the NBA, probably you're closer to achieving your American dream. You're a musician. You sold 100 million records, an actor, and all that. But the American dream to the 9-to-5 person who clocks in hours, maybe you go in and clock in hours, you get promoted, maybe you buy a house, you have a family, whatever a definition of a family is to you. You know, so I think it means different things to different people. But at the end of definitely. The day, it's good to have a dream. And
well, you know why I mentioned the whole Las Vegas and coming to a new place then is because the core of what America is now is that some people left Europe and maybe other places. Places that were already civilized to a certain extent. You know, they had monarchies, they had roads, they had carriages, they had all those things. And came to a new place and built it up to what it is today. You know, they had to deal with natives that they met on ground. You know, and by the time they got to America, there were no castles anywhere. There were no, you know, nothing. There were no towns, you know. They had to deal with so many things. And they did it and built America up to what it is today with the skyscrapers, and they have the Disneylands, you have Silicon Valley, you have Wall Street, you have so many different places. You have Florida, Miami. You know, you have so many different things and places that are so developed and advanced. But all this thing basically started from scratch, you know. As at the time, America really kicked off what it is today, maybe some close to 200 or something years or 300 years ago, other countries had already gone really, really advanced. You know, Italy was advanced, England was advanced, France was advanced, you know, Russia had advanced. But America came and built up and became the leading nation for what it is today. So for a lot of people, the American dream just basically means opportunity.
That is the word I was waiting for. Yeah. Desire. That is constant. You see, for me,
desire and, you know,
whether you agree that there's an American dream or not, there's one constant thing anybody will agree about America. That's why, you know, you talked about the immigrants and people coming in, and it is in one word, it's opportunity. And it now behoves on you to find whatever you want to do with that opportunity. You could see this opportunity and you could decide to lay on your bed and, you know, be a couch potato and just not do anything with it. Or you could decide that, look, you need to make sure you work intelligently towards whatever ideas and plans that you have. And the movie that we are about to, you know, talk about today really gives a very beautiful example. It gives an insight of what a story of an American dream, which is a true story, actually. And for anybody who may have come across or heard the name McDonald's, and I think you don't have to live in America to come across that name. Somehow, if you had turned on your TV screen and you had seen something in any country, you probably would have come across that brand McDonald's. And the movie The Founder basically tells the story of a man called Ray Kroc, and he was a salesman, according to this story, who turned two brothers, their innovative fast food, you know, eatery, into the biggest restaurant business in the world. That is the standard right now in terms of, they are not talking about in America. They're talking about in the world. And this movie, this story, as depicted in the movie, The Founder, that is directed by John Lee Hancock, and it's written by Robert Siegel. It has Michael Keaton, Mr. Birdman himself, Nick Offerman, John Carroll Lynch, amongst others. When I see that something I know is a true story, right? And then you see a writer I know that sometimes, you know, like somebody writes the story, I believe they present it for screen, and you try to, you know, you could dramatize it or animate it a little bit, but you are still trying to get the essence of the true story out there. That is the key thing in all of this. And this film basically chronicles the story of this guy who was supposedly some kind of a milkshake salesman, you know, trying to put his sales pitch out there. And he bumped into these two guys who just wanted to sell hamburgers from one store. And it appears that, I mean, for those of you who have watched the movie, you can follow, or you can follow and then go watch the movie. The thing here is that you find a situation where one side of the whole equation has a very huge dream. He is seeing stars. Mm-hmm. He is seeing the whole world. While the other guys who have this very genius idea, but they are not looking at things. They are not seeing the whole world. They are just trying to see their business from a myopic standpoint. And they, you know, the whole movie just, you know, goes through this whole process of, you know, how they their own ideas are running as cross purposes with each other. At the end of the day, it really shows how Ray Kroc came from a salesman, basic sales, door-to-door salesman, obscurity, to becoming the owner of, you know, somebody who had built a restaurant franchise that is global. How did this movie rob you? What did you get out of it?
I was excited. I felt some, you know, I felt some empathy. I had some empathy for the people whose names are McDonald's, the brothers who started the business. Mm-hmm. I had some empathy for them. But then, looking at it dispassionately, and I realized that the truth of it is, at the end of the day, what makes the world, what makes things grow, not necessarily the fact that the person involved is involved in it till the end, or, you know, it takes someone having a huge vision. What grows things is a man of vision. And no matter how great your idea is, no matter how beautiful it is, no matter your own personal connections to your idea or the pain it sprung from or your reasons for starting a business, if your vision isn't big enough, someone with a bigger vision will come in and take over your business.
The movie actually talks more about, you know, let me just read out a line, because I think this was something that fascinated me and I can only trace that thing to somebody they called, is it Calvin Coolidge? I might be wrong, but, and I'll just read it out quiet. Also, now it says, when he got into his room, he put on a record that said something that goes like this: persistence is everything. Yep. Nothing in the world can take the place of persistence. There are a lot of talented people out there that are unsuccessful.
Yes.
Genius won't. Unrewarded genius is practically a cliche.
Yep.
Education won't. The world is full of educated fools. Persistence and determination alone are all powerful. I repeat that one. He said, persistence and education alone are all powerful. Show that you don't have to be defeated by anything. So I don't want to go through the whole, you know, because he had this record that he used to play. And as much as you mentioned vision, you know, he had a vision. I think vision was there by default, or a vision came to him based on certain antecedents experiences.
I think you can only be persistent. I think that persistence, it can only happen when you can see something. When you can see the light at the end of the tunnel.
Of course, you're chasing something. You're persistent.
A lot of people who don't persist is because they can't get their head out of what they're dealing with. And they can't see either the bigger picture or the light at the end of the tunnel. And so why I keep mentioning vision is because being able to see that this thing is possible makes it easier to keep pushing towards that sight that you're beholding. You know, yeah. Being able to visualize something and being able to hold on to that vision and see it happening so easily. Like, oh, okay, this space here, I can see that, you know, we can get 1,000 people to come here every day. And if 1,000 people come every day, maybe they give us $1,000 every day. So that's $1,000,000. You know, being able to see it so clearly is the only reason why you will push through a certain amount of setbacks that will definitely happen along the way.
Yeah, okay.
I think that it's a twine. I think vision and persistence are intertwined. I doubt if there's anybody that has vision that doesn't have persistence.
Let's say it depends on how we look at what a vision is, because, you know, sometimes you could have a vision, and that vision of, you know, a big business idea, or even a basic aspiration, mm-hmm. You could decide you want to be the biggest musician internationally, like, you know, a Wizkid or a Davido, or you could decide you want to be a great actor, you know, an international actor like the RMDs, and, you know, even people like just any actor you can think of. There are a lot of them out there who are international. Now, it's a dream and it's a vision. But you see, like, I think if I were to quote something from, sometimes I forget because I've read a lot of books that, you know, talk about subjects like that. And there's one particular author that said something about, you know, good ideas are everything. And then he comes to the part where he now stresses on the word work. And, mm-hmm. you know, I feel that work is all encompassing of a lot of things, of which persistence is part of work. Now, as depicted in this movie, that starts where, you know, it starts where he is selling some kind of milkshake machine that promises to help you produce more milkshake than you normally do. And, you know, there's a slogan he does. There's this kind, you know, most salespeople actually have a slogan. You know, yeah. It says increase the supply. Increase the supply and the demand will follow.
True.
The chicken and egg situation. And, you know, he uses that line hoping that the salesperson will catch his drift. But it appears that it's particularly a hard sell, but yet he continues to sell it and continues to inundate his mind with, you know, the whole persistence record. Because most of the times when these filmmakers put these scenes inside there and they want to show you something, they are trying to tell you that he has to have it at forefront. Because repetition is the law of deep and lasting impression. If you do not continue putting something in your mind, after a while, you probably... So this film shows us that this is one of the things that Ray Kroc did. And I think it's introduced before he actually bumps into the Mack brothers. That's Dick and Mack.
Yeah, the McDonald brothers.
The McDonald brothers, you know? So it's introduced in this part of the film, just to show that look, this is what this guy is working with. Because, I mean, a lot of people could watch this film for just basic entertainment. Some people could watch it to maybe study a pattern. I mean, for anybody who is in business and has big dreams too, I think before we even get to where we recommend or don't recommend, I'll recommend this movie easily because there are a lot to...
I over-recommend it.
There are a lot... You know, that you have to pick up. So, okay. So we get to the part where he bumps into the Mack brothers. Was that Dick and Mack, right? Or
Richard and Maurice, or short form as Dick and Mack.
Dick and Mack is how I remember them in the movie.
Their full names are Richard and Maurice McDonald.
Yeah. So Dick and Mack, actually, they are the owners of the original McDonald's. And sometimes if you try to Google the founders of McDonald's, Yes, Ray Kroc, of course, will be at the head of the list before most of these guys come up, because their story, you know, based on if you watch the film, understand. So these guys are having, are you trying to say that Dick and Mark, on their own part, are you saying they didn't have a vision? Because first of all,
they had
they ordered six milkshake machines. They ordered six. This is how they met with Ray Kroc.
Yep.
They ordered six milkshake machines, and at the end of the day, you know, they reviewed the order to eat. Even milk, even
Ray Kroc
felt that he felt, look, it's impossible for one person to be ordering six of this milkshake that I have been trying to sell, even just one. So at some point, I feel like, what was going on with Dick and Mark?
They and I think that's part of why I said, I think vision itself is the same way work. People feel work is just one dimensional. Vision itself is, it has a more, you know, so many angles to it. It goes beyond seeing what you want and being able to work towards it. It also requires persistence and everything. Because the McDonald brothers had a dream, and not just that, they dream, they had a way of doing things. Initially, they wanted to make it in Hollywood. They came out to Hollywood, you know, and also to make some money, you know, to work at the same time. And it didn't really work out for them. So they now noticed that there was someone that was sort of doing well when every other person was struggling. You know, this was just after the Great Depression in America, after the 1920s, where everything wasn't working, you know. So many things in the world were tight. People were struggling to make kids meet. And they noticed that there was someone that was always having customers, and it was the hot dog person, you know, simple food, quick, easy to make, quickly done. And they got into the hot dog business. And, you know, from there, they got into the business. And after a while, they realized that it wasn't efficient. You know, so because of that nature, they tried to make it more efficient. And in a bid to make it more efficient, they came up with the speedy system where, you know, they get everything done. Everything is processed in a timely manner, in an orderly manner, where there are multiple angles working together, just like a machine, and making sure that people get their food on time. You know, they cut out what used to cause the delays before. You know, the waitresses were talking to customers. People were hanging out. People were not getting the right orders because everybody was mixing up orders. So they simplified the process. Notice that 80% of what they were making their revenue from was burgers and ice cream. Every other thing was surplus to requirements. So they focused on only those three products. They simplified their portfolio, focused on only those products, and found a way to make it get done. So from order to delivery, once you say, I want this, till when you get it was 30 seconds, which was unheard of. So they had in line from, you know, here to wherever. And that simple vision, that simple dream they had of making sure things were done a certain way, and their own natural personal efficiency came into bear, and that's why they were doing well. They tried to do franchising themselves, but it didn't work because they wanted a certain kind of quality control. And quality control to them meant they supervising the work themselves, because they had a dream, or they had a way things should have been done in their head that they couldn't translate to other people. But then this guy came along, Ray Kroc, and he saw beyond them, because personally on his own, he had already been thinking that way of expanding, of growing things, you know, of creating the supply that the demand will follow. So he already had a personal vision of supply first before demand. The other people were just meeting a demand more efficiently. He was like, you know what? Let's boost up the supply. Once it's out there, people will come because the product is great. And so, those two differences is what affected them in the end.
In other words, they were the genius.
Yep.
While Ray Kroc was geniuses. The persistent, the unrewarded genius, based on the, like, you know, the records that Ray Kroc was listening to. And they were genius, because the speedy system, especially, you know, The Speedy system is probably a model that would have been borrowed by anybody because they were giving it out free. I mean, here is a Ray Kroc. Here is a Ray Kroc sitting down in front of a McDonald's eating his burger, and then the guy is sweeping and just bumps into him, and in 2 seconds he says, "Look, oh, don't worry, I'll give you a tour. I'll show you everything they show," which appears to be, I mean, I know that you sold machines to us, but I'm just trying to think of like our local business and how many people are just willing to show a random supplier their whole system. And then he takes them out to dinner, and it's the dinner, when they have this dinner, that they now reveal to him what you call the Speedy system, of which creates the, 30-second time lapse from order to delivery. And from what I take, you see, the Speedy system was something that Ray Kroc saw that it was genius, but he knew that it wasn't enough. By the scene, after the dinner the next day, these people drive up to the parking lot where they normally come to work, and they see the guy standing there. And they're like looking at this guy with, why is he here again? I thought he has done supply. He has done dinner with us. Let him be going. No. He stands in front of them and says, "Franchise." And when they say they've already done it, and he goes away, he still, in this movie, he still tries to go back.
Yeah.
Sell his milkshake machine. But the thing is, the milkshake machine thing, his spirit, and if you remember one of the things that where he said in that tape, when he said that a man is what he thinks, and he says what you think about all the time is an indicator. Yeah. And it's like the thing couldn't leave his mind. I think what me I got was he couldn't even think of selling the milkshake as effective as possible, because the thing consumed him. Yeah, it consumed him, and he felt, look, man, Speedy system, franchise, you people can't just be selling this thing in one gutter somewhere, one quiet place, and that you can't be selling this in one quiet place, that you need to take this thing international. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, or take it global.
Take it around the country.
But they said they had tried it, in all honesty. Yeah. And that brings me to, they had tried to sell it. But what was the issue? Two words: quality control. And that is exactly what he said to Ray Kroc. Quality control was the problem. Mr. Of which even Ray Kroc, as the movie progressed, he saw what the issue was. And the thing is this, like, you could have a vision, and then as you try to work towards a vision, despite the known problems of which, like, quality control was told to him, you start to experience that, oh, this has to be done, that has to be done, and then more things to start coming up, and you look at it and say, these things have to be done. There are a lot of things that are actually important to be done. And then for some people, the thing is, when the work overshadows them, and you see the persistence that you're supposed to have to push through the work, we're talking about transcending discouragement, transcending the naysayers, people who will tell you can't, people who will call you stupid, and say all sorts of things about you. That is, somebody who is on a mission and has a vision, should, those are not even part of the things that dissuade them. But sometimes it's the overwhelming work. I remember, in terms of franchising, I will just share a personal experience. There's there used to be in Lagos, Nigeria, there's this Mr. Biggs that used to be between that's through Lere Road. Forgotten the name of the show, but it's a road that links from that Lawans into Joeleba side. That road, there used to be a filling station. I'm just missing the name of the brand, because I haven't lived there in a while, so I forgot. But I know this
before the railway line at Jiaba.
The place is inconsequential, actually. I went there to eat. They had this pack, Mr. Biggs rice and chicken, then that I used to buy, just driving and buy The issue here is, when I ate that rice, I said, no. This thing is not, it's not, it's, it was terrible. It was oily, it was, you know, and then, but when I went to the one at Techu Osho, which I ended up going to, then, and that was the one that actually matched the same ones that you could get in places like, you know, VI and other places they had. There was even one on, I don't know, Ogusonya Junction. I don't know if they are still there. So the issue, no, the issue now yet. Is that for
I think
me,
Mr. Biggs as a franchise is no longer
the thing is, there are a lot of franchises that have died. The point actually for me is that when he mentions quality control, I just remember that experience. And you see, before you start crucifying business people who do business and render service, first of all, you have to recognize that is not easy. That is why every time I call a customer service, I am not trying to hound the person at the other end of the phone. Sometimes if I'm angry, I'll even tell the person, look, I know you're just doing a job. It's not you. But just, you know, this, because sometimes you have to do it. I mean, you don't just want to take it out on somebody. So the thing here is that quality control seemed to be a key issue. And when Ray Kroc tried to build his business, he found out that. Because do you remember the scene where he goes to one of the franchises and he sees somebody eating
a hamburger, hamburger
with one huge lettuce? And you know, sometimes the way these things are presented on screen, sometimes you just know that something's wrong. And he goes to a golf course to his partners and the people, those guys just don't care. All they are thinking about is selling.
It was
selling hamburgers.
No,
an investment, but how the investment will yield fruits was something that I think Ray Kroc knew.
They weren't really interested. They were already rich, so they didn't really care, actually. So he noticed that part of what was the quality control of Dick and Mark was the care factor. You needed people who had individual franchises that cared about matching the brand's quality control. For a lot of the rich people who were already rich enough to be playing golf all day, you know, they didn't really care. They just said, okay, we'll put our money in this thing. And, you know, if it brings profit, it brings profit. You know, it's something else to do with our money. But he noticed from that first experience, from that first expansion process that he went through, was that for most of the people he talked to initially, they didn't really care until he came across a Jewish guy trying to sell a Bible to his staff. And he was like, what's a Jewish guy doing trying to sell a Bible? And the guy just, you know, I'm just trying to make a living, you know, something that I and my wife could do. And then he spoke to the husband and wife. I saw that they were willing to work as a team to get the business up and running. And that's where he now got the idea to market the franchise module to families, to couples who were willing to invest in something that will keep both couples in the business, ensuring that the minimum was met. And that's when the first level of expansion grew.
I think that is the science of, you see, what I saw there, really, because the guy who was selling the Bible by the name of Leonard Rosenblatt.
Yes.
And he was like the Jewish guy selling Catholic Bible. Of course, he felt he sees that scene. Now, I feel that Ray Kroc is able to see something like that because he's a salesman. And sales flows in his blood. I mean, look at how he sells the business to this McDonald's brothers. He's talking about flag, you know, crosses. The golden arches. So, you know, when he drove through the town and he's, you know, they said, you know, when he picks up the concept of the golden arches and he goes through the town and he looks at it and he's, you know, he sells it to them first. So sales basically is flowing through this guy's blood. He's a salesman. And then, so it takes one to see one. Because, I mean, for anybody who has never done any type of door-to-door sales or sold anything over the phone, or you may not relate with this. But for somebody who has even tried, then you know it is not the most easy, it's not the easiest thing on the planet. So when he sees this Leonard Rosenblatt guy and he's selling Bible, he comes out to meet him and say, look, so I think when you want to build a big vision, also, after having identified that the problem was quality control, you now have to adopt a different set of skills, which is like, you literally have to become a fisher of men.
Oh, of course.
And I think what Ray Kroc did was he identified that thing and believed that, okay, he needs to get the right guys inside and inject them into that speedy system so that they can maintain quality. They are the guys that have to know that, look, the pickle has to be two. The ketchup has to be sprayed in four different places.
Yeah.
You know, the tomatoes. He needed these guys to ensure standard. And after Super, because you cannot do, the thing about business is like, you can't do everything. You can only do as much as you can. And if it is going to grow, you're going to first of all have to realize that you're going to need people. You're going to have to learn how to replicate yourself in people to be able to do the things like you would do it. Dude, that skill is easier said than done.
Yeah,
it's easier said than done.
It made me realize two things. It made me understand why salespeople eventually end up running companies. Because to be an adequate salesman, you have to see where it is going and get people that are going to buy into the product or the service to see what it is that this is going to do for them. That's one. Then on the other hand, it's not just about, you know, the salespeople seeing the vision and getting it done. You know, it takes a lot for the whole notion of the people saying that those that are managing or running companies not doing enough work, that why should the CEO earn this amount of money and so on and so forth, while the person that's actually putting the pickle into the hamburger is actually doing the work. And they fail to realize the amount of work that goes into getting a company that has locations in over 120 countries to do a meal the same way. It's not one person in one branch that is getting it done. It is somebody somewhere on top ensuring that the person under him is ensuring that the person under him is ensuring that the person under him is making sure that everybody puts two pickle in a hamburger.
My point is hard.
It's not to be taken lightly.
Anyway,
quality control is almost an impossible task.
When you see people who want to micromanage a business, first of all, you just have to understand how far that business will go. People who see from the mountaintop already know, look, if you do it like this, you're just as depicted in this
movie. You'll crash, burn out, and die.
Dick and Mac, they wanted to control everything. You know, they had this they have this sensitive thing about their name. Don't put my name on a document. They were the party of no. Don't do this. Don't do this. We don't want to go here. And this guy was looking at the whole planet. You know,
exactly.
So he was like, I felt at some point he just looked at it. In his mind, he would have just said, what kind of people are these? I'm trying to take these guys to the whole world. And I believe that if Dick and Mark had seen, you know, the vision, if they were able to tie themselves into the vision of Ray Kroc, you know, they would have been fully recognized as co-founders, because it appears, I mean, for those that have seen the movie and, you know, run through the whole thing, they just became a statistic in history of which the real founder. But let us look at this thing again critically, because you see, apart from just looking at the story, you know, Ray Kroc meets these two guys. You know, one of the things I also tried to extract from this film was the how. And you find that it just goes in layers. Okay, Ray Kroc meets Dick and Mark, and then they try to start a franchise, and he's dealing with quality control issues. The film leads you down this road where he is a fisher of men. It tells you how he's able to identify it. And what I got from there is that he's a salesperson, so he should be able to do that. And then the thing here is, when he starts having problems with the bank, and you know, there is this particular guy who I felt that he was the elixir or the final elixir that turned on the full light with regards to Ray and to Ray Kroc. You know, when because and his name was Harry Sonneborn, and Harry Sonneborn was just eavesdropping while he was talking to his bankers, and then you know, networks his way into Ray Kroc's life and tells him that, dude, this hamburger business you're selling, you're not making any money. What you need to be going into is a real estate business. Because, okay, apparently this business model was a business model where you lease buildings where they sell these hamburgers, right? So when you lease this building where they sell, Harry Sonneborn's idea basically is, dude, why don't you buy up these buildings? We are going to try and get investors. Let us buy and own this building. You become the owner of the building. Now let your franchisees like do anything they want inside the building, but you become the owner of that building. And considering now that you are the owner of this building, what happens is that your franchisees must abide to the rules and the tenements and the standards that you set for the business. If not, you can kick them out. That becomes, because it's not a rent a flat kind of thing. It's like a hotel. Everybody has rules and regulations. There are some houses you want to live in. The landlord will tell you, this is how I want my house. I don't want noisy. I don't want, in Nigeria, I don't want generator. Some people do it. So the thing here is, they do all of that. And at the end of the day, he now had the power and control of the business, because now you're not talking of leasing, you're talking of owning. And this was how it appeared to, you know, I mean, you look at the movie where his office changes to a franchise company, and this particular thing too, the naysayers by name of Dick and Mark were saying, you can't use our company to do this. You can't. No. And this guy tells them, look, this is a separate company. It's just the housing company that owns the building where the business is done. Your business starts from the door and ends within the floor and everything. But roof, sides, ground is mine. And this, I feel, was the elixir that actually changed the game. And I felt that was good knowledge, because sometimes, you see, we have seen a lot of people who have set up businesses. We have some very great businesses in Nigeria and Africa as a whole, like, you know, Tasty Fried Chicken. There was one in I really, really, you know, liked. And there are a lot of them springing up too. And I'm sure most of them have adopted the whole speedy system, But of course, franchising internationally, for some people, you will have gray areas of knowledge. I mean, it's not a business model in itself that we could have all the answers to, but people like Ray Kroc and the people that he came in touch with were able to answer. But let's take a little break, and then we will just, we'll just bounce right back.
To me, it was all inclusive. It was Irish to the Irish. It sounded Scotch to the Scotch. It was a typical English-American word. It flowed, McDonald's. It was easy for the kids to say and remember. And I liked the sound of it. It sounded wholesome, and it sounded genuine, you know? I don't like these gimmick type names, you know, burger this and burger that and all that kind of stuff. McDonald's, it's got a nice sounding name. Sounds like Tiffany's, and I think we are the Tiffany's of the ham.
That was the voice of the real Ray Kroc, as we welcome you back.
The man himself.
He has this emphasis on name. And he said, I don't like the name of, you know, burger this, burger that. I'm trying to, you know, when he said that, I'm trying to say, oh, wait, was there Burger King? before McDonald's or McDonald's. Anyway, we can't carry all the histories of
McDonald's. They all sprung up after.
But the thing is, I think, you know, first of all, it was called McDonald's burgers. So he seemed to, I just like McDonald's. I just don't want to, you know. There was something about this guy. And he said he compares it to Tiffany's. I'm saying now, wow. Like food.
And I think I know that's there's the one they call Wendy's. Men of vision. They have this innate understanding. And it's because he was, you know, he said he got his breakthrough when he was in his 50s. You know, at the end of the movie, he's talking, he's practicing a speech he's going to give in front of Ronald Reagan. And, you know, he mentions that he got his own breakthrough in his 50s. And the same way Reagan became president in his, when he was 55. And, you know, he, based on all these things, he has this almost expert, but he, maybe he can't put his finger in, but almost expert understanding of what the American press audience wants to buy.
Yeah.
You know, so he has that understanding, you know, as a salesman that, and the most times those days, you know, a salesman saw that enter into his Buick, carry a product, go door to door and try and get you to buy something. So you deal with all sorts of Americans. You know their frustrations. You know what they want. You have an idea of who is at home. Whether it's, you're dealing, most likely you're selling to a housewife. You know, you're seeing all these things and you're seeing what they respond to. Your brain is automatically storing the right information, discarding the one that's irrelevant. And so he got to a point where he realized that people didn't like gimmicks. You know, nobody wanted it to come and say, this is the fastest, call a name of a milkshake seller that, oh, fast milkshake seller. You know, they wanted things that sounded more natural. You know, someone's name, something more family-oriented. Because at that time, America was big on family. And, you know, so he had that innate understanding. So when he saw the name, he told them at the end, he revealed to the brothers at the end that the real reason why he actually got involved in this is because of the name. It wasn't because of the speedy system, because he told them that he showed, they had shown a lot of other people, just like him, how the business worked. Because it was a thing of pride for them. Oh, our burgers come out quickly.
Yeah.
They had shown other people. And other people had tried to do it, and they had failed because they didn't have the right name.
Yeah, it was the genius that they had, actually. And that was what they... But you see... The thing is, let's look at the person of like Ray Kroc, because you see, people of vision, they've mentioned people, we've had a lot of great people come on this planet who have done things in society and, you know, effect change in society for the good of all, whether change particular political systems, legal systems that have shaped them. People have come and they've built great businesses. But I mean, you look at the personal life, and one of the things I picked from this film was the relationship Ray Kroc had with his wife. And I'll tell you where what I got from it is, appears that their visions seem to be running at cross purposes with each other. Wife wants him to be at home, and he thinks, I can't, I gotta be out there. And this reminds me of, I used to have this old, this older guy that I used to talk to a couple of years ago. And I told him, you're always out of the house, everything, you know, what are you, you know, then I was younger. I said, look, if I'm at home all the time, me and my wife, you know, we'll be hungry. And we see in this movie depicting where you want to be at, she wants him to be at home. You know, she wants them to travel. And, you know, sometimes when they inject all these little scenes where they are having dinner with their peers and they get mocked, they'll say, oh, no, they talk about a place you traveled to and, oh, you traveled there. Oh, you've not even traveled there. You know, they make mockery and then she feels it. But this guy is thinking about changing the world. And then along this journey, he bumps into somebody that is thinking like him. And this is somebody else's wife, I got the right thing. She came up with this idea, you know, as they were getting people to inject into the franchise system, as he was being a fisher of men and injecting people into the franchise system. He now bumped into this guy, but it turns out it's his wife that came up with this system of how to get a milkshake. and how this milkshake could be made quickly, you know, just sachet it. And but basically just a revolutionary idea that blew his mind. And you notice that they start talking over the phone. And as they are talking over the phone, they are talking about the business and everything. And he is drawn to this woman. And, you know, the way movies, you know, do cut to the chase. They are having dinner. He just tells the wife, I want a divorce.
Yeah.
And now, fast forward to, okay, what will a divorce cost? He said, she can take everything. Car, houses, everything. Insurance. But he said that, insurance, everything. But he said that he's not giving her a dime of the McDonald's franchise. You know what I thought about when I watched that scene? I thought about, you know, Jeff Bezos and his wife's divorce. And of course, you know, Jeff Bezos and his wife, at least there's a little bit of history out there that shows that they built their business together. They struggled together. So whatever it is, she really deserves a call. You cannot by any standard call her any kind of, you know, gold digger or anything close to that. Because she struggled with him. They built this business together. But then when you look at, you see, I mean, I can't judge the woman. A woman needs her husband and everything. But you see, sometimes I feel that, man, if she had done something like, you know, a go-between. And the film actually depicts where she seemed to be encouraging him at some point a little bit. But she started getting just disinvolved. You know, he would be... Intermittently, he comes home, talks about some things that have happened in the business and everything. And she's like, for lack of a better way to put it, she's like, okay, one of your new revolutionary ideas. And, you know, and these things just, at some point, this guy's looking at, that as the Mac and Mac brothers are trying to slow me down, it's as if this woman too is trying to slow me down. She reminds him of the Mac brothers. And so when he saw somebody that could think on his pace, you know, he felt, look, I gotta move. Damn the consequences. He wasn't even thinking about
what pushed him in that line initially too was, man, was the fact that he was attracted to the new woman that he met, another person's wife, who funny enough was someone that helped him expand the franchise at the time, because at that time he was looking at towns, he wasn't looking at major cities and stuff. What really struck him was, as at the first time when he started the franchise, when he got on the idea that it wasn't about selling the business to people like him or people who were maybe slightly above him in the financial goals and who had almost retired, basically, was about selling it to couples and people who were still willing to build something together as a family. And there was a scene where in the bedroom he was telling his wife that, you know, he talked to this couple today and they were so excited that, you know, the man does this and the woman does this. And she was just like, yeah.
That's it now, yeah.
And that scene, he kept trying to push it on her, impress on her that it was a husband and wife thing. And she didn't, she was just like, okay.
I think he was trying to sell the vision to her and she wasn't just picking up on it.
You know, interested so that two of them could, you know, fight on it, because it wasn't like he necessarily wanted to be away from her or something, but he wanted the woman on him beside him thinking the same way he was thinking, because he was going to spend a lot of time on the project. And the best way to have quality control is when the person closest to you is seeing the things the way you see it.
Of course, it's going to be faster that way. And so, you guys will be together doing the business together. That's it. That's the thing. Than having to do the business and come home.
So as soon as he noticed that she wasn't up to it, he lost it. He just fell out of, I think, was just a disinterest thing.
So would you think that it would be more of the fact that he met somebody new, or that he just felt she was disinterested? Because I feel that if he hadn't jammed this, his in air quotes, correct babe, that could match all his dreams and aspirations in terms of where he was going, you know? And because sometimes, you see, people could get married and maybe it starts out well. And at the end of the day, you know, ideologies, visions, whatever you thought you were into starts running across purposes with each other. Now, and most of the time, there's this fight to hold it together. And I feel that Ray Kroc could have been okay with, okay, she's just there, I'm doing my McDonald's business. If I become the millionaire, I give her money if she wants it, or, you know, do anything. But I feel mm-hmm. that the reason he left, or I is because he met somebody and he felt that, look, if I move with this person, where yeah. I am opening two franchises, having to deal with another, you know, Dick and Mark. But if I'm dealing with this woman now, where I'm opening two franchises a month, I'm going to be opening 10 franchises. Because as I'm saying, let's go. She's there. Let's go.
She's
contributing.
She saw his vision.
She saw it and she bought into it. She knew he was going to be the big dog. She knew where he was going. That's the thing. And that is one of the things that, you see, the wife couldn't pick up on. And sometimes before we start judging her, you know, sometimes it's antecedents, bills have to be paid, the man is going out every day, no money, you say you are selling milkshake machine, we are, you know, and sometimes these things. But you see, one thing I felt she should have picked up on and at least believed is that this guy was a man on a mission. But at the end of the day,
it's
he
mortgaged the house.
Yeah,
the house. The thing is,
I can't blame her, really. It's a sad situation.
Yeah, but it is.
It's a sad situation.
For a lot of these guys, the reason why they get to the heights they get is because, as we've said many times in this podcast, is they persist. But the thing about persisting is you have to push beyond boundaries to an extent. And for some people, given how they were raised or given how they see life, you don't get to the edge before you stop. But for people like Ray Kroc, they drive full speed towards the edge of the cliff, hoping or believing that when they get to the cliff, a road will appear in front and they can keep driving.
Yeah.
But for a lot of people, when they see that edge of the cliff, they press the brakes and they're like, okay, we're not struggling, so why do we need to drive this fast? You understand?
I can't kill myself.
And the only reason why people that get to the edge or get that far is because they drive at that speed towards the edge of the cliff, or they keep going. But for a lot of people, they can't make that. They can't do that. It's scary. It destroys relationships. We've seen so many in our podcast. We've seen so many situations where the couples end up splitting because someone is going in a direction that the other person isn't going to. And the person beside them can't see it or can't understand it. And it's a huge problem for them, you know? Even in the one we did, Come Sunday. Initially, he was almost having problems with his wife because the way he was doing things or the way he was running the church wasn't the way she was feeling left out. Yeah. It was only when he changed his way and he saw a different vision of how God interpreted going to heaven, or how Jesus, or how people, or how the Bible interpreted the whole Jesus dying for our sins, was when she now got involved and everything got better for them as a couple. You know, but for a lot of people, especially for men of vision and purpose, it takes a lot to carry their wives along. And we've seen a lot of cases, either they end up divorcing the first wife they were when they started, or something else. And usually for things like this, them not being able to see where the man is going, or where the woman is going. Another example I can bring up is when we did RBG, the story of RBG. She was able to get to where she was going because the man was on board. And they both worked together towards that vision. Now imagine RBG had to deal with a situation where her husband told her that, no, this won't work, this can't work. I don't think she would have been who she was today.
Yeah, that's vision. That is, you know, visions running at cross purposes with each other. Of which I have cited an example before. When, what would you do when you're trying to do something and then your significant other is thinking of something else, and that is running at cross purposes with the things that you want to achieve? But I believe that before Ray Kroc or anybody will go towards a harsh decision like divorce, it means that you are really 110% sure of what you are moving into, and you have determined in your mind with 100% guarantee that this person, you be like, say, this person will slow me down. You get it? So the issue here is, I don't judge her. It's a hard situation. And I mean, we've seen movies where, you know, a man promises and man, there's as much hardship anybody wants to go through. And sometimes you never know. You never know. He's the one that divorced. It's not like she left him anyway, because we've seen movies where it's the woman that left. But it's as if the man's vision drove him so hard that he couldn't even think of anything else but the business. And he just felt, look, I can't be somewhere trying to negotiate deal and somebody's calling me and say, look, you need to come home now. Your fries are getting cold. Anyways, I think in all, it was a good movie. It's inexhaustible. And as we do on this podcast, when we talk about all these movies, we try to learn some lessons from it. And one of the main thing I took, as we've mentioned over, is the issue of persistence. And persistence is hard. Whatever anybody is trying to do, you know, when you have been told no, you're an actor, you've been going to these auditions, you've been writing a book, no publisher, you've been trying to start a business, no customer. I think persistence, of course, with purpose, intelligence, vision too, helps. And that is basically what I got out of it, because there was just this emphasis on, you know, persistence. Mm-hmm. And I think that was my takeaway. What were your own final takeaways?
Yeah, so the same thing, to be honest. The founder is such a great piece of film. I'm surprised I actually didn't hear about it much earlier, because Michael Keaton is a very good actor. He has that all-American look. You know, when you think of an American man who has done the work, who has risen to the top of his profession, who has the average Joe turned good, you know, average Joe becomes, you know, rich man. He has that look. So he really sold the character well, you know. Mm-hmm. It felt like I was seeing the real Ray Kroc.
I guess that's what movies are basically supposed to do, that really. And you know, I think, because, you know, sometimes, because they are true stories for me, I tend to when I watch movies, if it's fiction, you know, science fiction, fantasy and everything, then I'm looking at the art, I'm looking at the presentation, I'm looking at a lot of mm-hmm. other things. But when it's a true story, I'm trying to look at the character, I'm trying to look at the events, I'm trying to look at the whole situation. Why is it a true story that needs to be told in film?
Yeah.
So there must be something about what happened. And I think the all-resounding message is persistence, which, I mean, it's easy to say, my brother, but the issue is that persistence in the face of adversity, not many will win. Not many will push. You really have to come to the point where you have total blind faith and very strong belief. Oh,
but he did well, because at 52 was when he got the big break.
Yeah.
So I mean, how many of us can imagine still trying to get a vision from the ground up, get a business to, you know, grow to that size at the age of 52. A lot of people have this dream where at the age of 52, you know, that they've kicked their feet up, there's some money coming in from somewhere, and, you know, they just go on vacations every other day. Mm-hmm. But he, at 52, was still trying to start something from scratch.
Yeah.
And it's remarkable what he was able to achieve. It's mm-hmm. remarkable the effect it had on the world. I mean, they gave a statistics where they said a McDonald's feeds 1% of the world's population every year.
Oh, no doubt. It was a great business. No question about that.
That would have happened if Dick and Mark were left on their own. Mm. It won't have happened if he didn't marry his second wife, Joanne. So there's a lot of lessons there about how these things work in the end. Sometimes they have growing pains. Sometimes people are left behind. Sometimes what looks like bad things happen to good people happen. But in the end, it requires someone with the ultimate sense of drive and will, sense of will, to get something done, being at the helm of affairs. All in all, the founder was something all founders or all prospective founders and startup leaders should watch. A lot of lessons there.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. You can follow our podcast on Facebook at Remote Talkatives, and that's Talkatives with an ER. Or you can follow on Twitter at @rtalkatives, and that's also Talkative with an ER. Now, we post movies that we're going to talk about before we actually publish them on Spotify and any place you listen to your podcast. You can also send us an email at podcast@remotetalkatives.com. You can send us feedback, tell us what you think, suggest a movie, or just basically comment on some of the things that you feel should have happened based on what we have talked about. We welcome feedback, and we thank you once again for listening, and we will see you next week with another discussion.